Yeshiva University, and truly a good friend and noted scholar. Rabbi Shachter will be speaking on facing the truths of history regardless of ideology. And of course, he's the son of our dear chaver, Rabbi Herschel Shachter and Penina. Das Zeichet is, of course.
Selling books, don't they?
Tell me what you need. I'm not going to
buy, okay?
Pleasure to be able to spend some time with you and talk about a subject to which I've given a great deal of thought. But I first want to begin with a story. The story is told about the Brisker Rav. Famous story about the Brisker Rav, who, it's hard to actually say this, but the Brisker Rav had chassidim. And you know the talmidim of the Brisker Rav, Rav Yitzhak Zev Halevi Soloveitchik, the Griz, Zechorin of the Bracha, had Talmidim, and the Talmidim of the Brisker Rav would always very carefully examine what it was that the Brisker Rav did. And they would adhere every religious act of the Brisker Rav with a great deal of normative significance. And whatever the Rav did, that's the way they did it. However the Rav did the mitzvah, that's how they did the mitzvah. So the story is told that the Brisker Rav once had a dilemma, because he went to light Hanukkah candles. And in front of the Hanukkah candles there was a broom. So he had a problem, and the problem was, what's he going to do? He's going to remove the broom, then all of his Talmidim will take a broom and remove the broom, and they'll think it's a din and Hanukkah candles. If he doesn't remove the broom, he'll never get to light the candles. So for Shteitzach, he had to remove the broom, but he turned around and told his Talmidim, Izol vissin adosin nitla doiris. I'm removing the broom, but it's a nitla doiris. That's not the punchline. The punchline is every year the Briskers go, take a broom, put a broom, remove the broom, and say, Yizol vissin adosin itla doiris. The issue that we're dealing with now is an issue of ladoiris. The question is how one leaves one's legacy and how one understands somebody else's legacy. And obviously the stakes are very high when it comes to Gedolei Yisrael, because sometimes people are objective and honest, and sometimes people present the legacy of Gedolei Yisrael Ladoiris in a way that they would like it to be, as opposed to necessarily the way that Gadol particularly was. I've come to this because I wrote my doctoral dissertation on Rabbi Yaakov Emden, and I'm doing still an enormous amount of work on Rabbi Yaakov Emden. My next book, Mirz Hashem, will be a new critical edition of the autobiography, Megillat Sefer, of Rabbi Yaakov Emden. There are two editions that exist, if you've read either of them, and they're both incorrect and improper and censored and simply sloppy, you will already get a sense that we're dealing here, and even if you didn't read Megillat Sefer, just from what you know about Rabbi Yaakov Emden, with a very unusual personality. And how does one assess such a personality? How does one write about such a personality? How does one put in writing statements about Gedolei Yisrael, a gadol like Rabbi Yaakov Emden, who was extremely complex and extremely difficult and not just a simple cookie cutter gadol like some people would imagine all Gedolei Yisrael are? For my dissertation itself, my teacher, and you should have a refuah shleimah, Professor Tversky, did not force me to deal with the personality of Rabbi Yaakov Emden. I wrote 791 pages, and he was Michael the personality. But when I come to write my book, which I hope to write afterwards on Rabbi Yaakov Emden, that I'm going to have to deal with the personality. And how does one characterize such a personality? Understanding the facts of the personality, but at the same time, obviously having tremendous derech eretz for the gadol that Rabbi Yaakov Emden was. So I've been giving a lot of thought to this issue about posterity, about l'dayris, about legacies, about how people are understood and should be understood. And I've come to the conclusion that the only honest way to do this is to be honest. And to be honest means to face the facts and to deal with the facts, and the chips will fall where they fall, but you can't change the facts. The nuances of the assessment and the interpretation is obviously very significant, but you can't change the facts. And this brought me into a whole discussion. I prepared 12 pages here for you that I want to briefly run through. We don't have time to do it all by Arichas, but just Rashi Prakim, and you'll be able, I think, to get the gist if there are a couple of pages. And you'll have the opportunity, if you are so inclined, to be able to finish it and read it more on your own. In November of 1994, there was an article that appeared by Baron Feldman in the Jewish Observer, Gedola Books, and the biography of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. This is a book review of a biography of Rabbi Yaakov that appeared shortly before. And Rav Feldman, who lives in Yerushalayim, dealt with the whole genre of Gedola biographies. And I want to use this as the point of departure, because he touches, in the Jewish Observer, on the basic fallacy that he considers to be significant when it comes to your standard Gedola biography. And he makes the point that this particular biography of Rabbi Yaakov Zatzal does not fall into that category. It is, in fact, a positive, wonderful example of the best of what Gedola biography should be. The genre of Gedola books, biographies of great Torah personalities, has truly enriched English Judaic literature throughout the decades. He talks about why it's important to write Gedola biographies. Because when we learn about a Gadol, it's something that we want to aspire to. We want to be like him. We want to be able to be as great in our own personal lives as we see. These wonderful role models that we want to follow. A Gadol is the ultimate model against which his generation measures itself. When we read in the middle of the second column about Reb Chaim Eiser, Reb Shimon Shkab, Reb Moshe Feinstein, we are moved to demand more from ourselves. I mean, look what a human being can do. Look what a human being could be. So we could surely be better than we are. In spite of the major role that these Gedola books play in our national consciousness, they often possess two major flaws, says Rav Feldman. The first one is, it stems from stereotyping of their subjects. It's all the same story. He grew up, he was a prodigy, he learned a tremendous amount when he was a little boy, he had a precocious adolescence, he married a saintly woman, then he becomes a towering Gadol b'Yisrael. I have a nephew who learns in Yeshivas Neir Yisrael, who told me that one night he slept in the Weiber Shul. So that when they write his biography, they could say, when he was young, he slept in the Weiber Shul. This is one standard example of what goes into what Rav Feldman says is a typical Gedola biography. It's not difficult to understand a certain woman who, after having read a few of these stylized stories, remarked in all seriousness, how interesting to note that all Gedola lived identical lives. So the first point Rav Feldman makes in this Jewish Observer article is that there are differences. That there are differences between Gedola. And that these stories do not always demonstrate the unique contribution of each Gedola that he made to his times and how he was different from other Gedola. And they also ignore the self-sacrifice and dedication. Now it's as if from day one everything was perfect, everything was fine, and it overlooks all of the uniqueness and the singularity and the individuality that obviously goes into every single person's life. The second flaw, the bottom of the right-hand column, is that they were all geniuses. They were all geniuses, they were all mibetan or mileda, they already came out learning rishonim and achronim, superior intellectual talents, and that's a big mistake. Because, he says, it overlooks all of the haravanya. But it's not so simple. It's a lot of haravanya, not everybody was blessed with a tremendous brain. He tells a story about the Panavizhar Rosh Yeshiva, when he wanted to found the yeshiva. He wanted to found it only for Mitzuyanim. And the Chazon Ish said, shouldn't there be a Kailu where a future Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan can develop? Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan was known for not having been born with a tremendous genius. But he worked on himself. He harovid. He worked hard, and he made himself into Rabbi Yitzchok Chanan. And that, says Rav Feldman in this article, is even more inspiring, because somebody who's reading these books thinks, Nebuch, I'm not a genius, so I'll never be able to aspire to be what these great Yidolim were. Other rabbis show that they were average at the beginning, show that they had to work hard, show that they had to overcome adversity and all kinds of issues, and then it's something that we can marvel ourselves after. True, many Gedolim in Jewish history, top right hand, were blessed with prodigious mental gifts, but this was not why they grew to be Gedolim. Rabbi Aaron Kotler, the founder of Beis Medrash Gavon in Lakewood and a full-fledged genius, if there ever was one, used to cherish Edison's adage. How did Rabbi Aaron Kotler come to Edison, parenthesis, which one of his students once cited before him? How else would Rabbi Aaron come to Edison? But once the Talmud told him, he had a geschmack from Edison's chav. What's Edison's chav? Genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. So we have to appreciate that, we have to understand it. Not all the Gedolim were geniuses, mibetan or mileta. And that's the problem, the second problem, says Rav Feldman, with Gedolim biography. I want to add a third problem, which he does not deal with, and that's a problem that very often Gedolim biographies lie. And they simply don't tell the truth. So it's not just an issue of cookie cutter and not pointing out to the individual distinction and characteristics about each one of them. It's not just a point that it overlooks the tremendous amount of yegiah and amelos that went into making them what they are, but sometimes they distort and they simply don't tell the truth. But before I get to the third one, I want to pick up on the two that were mentioned by Rabbi Feldman in this article, and we'll come back to the bottom of page 2 in a minute. If you look at the top of page 3, there's a letter in the Igros Uksavim from the Pachad Yitzchak, from Rav Huttner, from Yitzchak Huttner Zatzal. It's a letter to a Talmud who wrote to him that he's depressed. He's obviously a Ben Torah, he wants to learn, he wants the Harav and Steiger learning, but it's not going. The Yetzer Hara is overcoming him, he's finding all kinds of mechshaylas. It's not really, the learning isn't going as smoothly as it wants. The Milchemet HaYetzer is not as strong as he would like it to be. So Rav Yitzchak Huttner writes in this letter, it's a wonderful letter, a letter of chizuk. And he talks about the Gedolim. He says, you think all the Gedolim were born perfect? In line 4, he talks about Gedolenu. Misaper mano adake ashlemus shalahem. B'shar shanachnu medalgim ala mava kapnimi she'eschaylo benafsha. Hareshem shal sichosenu ala Gedolim iskabel ki'ilu yatsu mitachas yad hayotzer v'kaimasam uvitziv yoyna. As if they were created already in the tremendous tzivyain, in the koima that they later on were able to achieve. You think the Chafetz Chaim was born the Chafetz Chaim worked to become the Chafetz Chaim, but we don't talk about that, he says. Moshel echad mine ela, v'daylu novan shekamois choladu min apad alakwal, ha-toytsom yizehi, v'shenar bal ruach bal sh'ifa, bal tesisa, moite ba'atzmai mechshaylam nefilais yiridais, harei hu daima, ve'enav kebilti shosel b'beis Hashem. It's as if he's a nobody. He's a garnish. Look, Nebuchi, how strong could his religious personality be? How much of a venter could it be if he's facing all of these challenges? It should be geschmack and warm and wonderful and peaceful and serene. Why am I struggling so much? Why am I fighting so much? Why am I dealing with so many issues? Lida kisa leili es murgas misara sayetzer aderach hakosod shel, and so on. Abadalacha, he says that shayresh nishmascha hulai hashavol shel yetzer tov, says Rav Huttner Zatzal, aladavka luchamta shel yetzer tov, the luchama of the yetzer tov. That's the ikar of your neshama, not the shalva of the yetzer tov. Mechtavcha hayakar anilvav meir kemei aedin. For Anglos Aymerim, lose a battle and win the war. You may have lost a couple of battles with the Yetzer Hara, but you're on the right track. You're going to win the war, and you could be the Chafetz Chaim, because you think the Chafetz Chaim, and he continues here, didn't lose battles before he won the war. He also lost battles before he won the war. And so therefore it's important, to come back to Rabbi Feldman, to understand the struggle. It's not all the same. It's not all, they all didn't sleep in the Weiber Shul and all born geniuses and say the Shetlach when they were 9 years old. There's a lot of work that goes into it. And on the contrary, when we understand that there's a lot of work that goes into it, when we understand that Rabbi Yaakov Emden had tremendous difficulties that he had to overcome to be what he became, then it's something that we can feel that's more in the parasha. It's something that we can aspire to. Because we, after all, I speak for myself, when I'm not such a big genius, I'm not necessarily, you know, born me better than me later with a tremendous amount. So we have to work on it. When we realize that other people worked on it and overcame, so we have to do it, and we have an opportunity to do it as well. I edited a book that came out a week ago that I mentioned not only because I want to put in a plug for it, and this is by far the most important book that I've ever been involved in so far. It's called Judaism's Encounter with Other Cultures, Rejection or Integration. This is a book that was published by Jason Aronson that has four articles in it. It's under the aegis of the Torah Mada product, a project of Yeshiva University. There are four articles in it, each one about 80 pages, designed to show that the openness of Judaism to general culture is not an invention of the 20th century, but that it is part and parcel of Jewish tradition from the very beginning. So Professor Jerry Blitzstein from Be'er Sheva University from Ben Gurion University in Be'er Sheva has a chapter on Tkufat Chazal, and David Berger from Brooklyn College and Bernard Revel on Rishonim, Schneur Lyman, also from Brooklyn College and Revel on Achronim, and Ravon Lichtenstein, the last essay, the culminating essay of this volume, has an 80, 90 page essay, an incredible phenomenological overview, Kedarkei Bakodesh, as only he can do, of the significance and the importance of general culture, not just of science, but of humanities in particular, in order to enhance our understanding and our self-perception of ourselves as B'nai Torah. It's not just done that the nice things out there, but it helps us. It helps us shape our religious personality. It's an outstanding collection of essays, and I hope that you will all be able to benefit from it. Rebaron writes in the middle, and I Xerox two pages here at the bottom of page 3. Rebaron writes, and he said this publicly at a Torah Mada public lecture that he gave at Yeshiva many years ago. Second paragraph, I recall the respective funerals of two of the giants of our generation, Rebaron Kotler Zatzal and Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal. Of those who delivered eulogies about the former, Rebaron, only one, Mr. Irving Punim, a layman, provided any real insight into his personality. All the others lamented the loss of a great Gaon and Tzaddik and appropriately exhorted the audience to take stock and to take heart, but nary a word of genuine portrayal. The scene was pretty much repeated at Rav Moshe's funeral in Yerushalayim. Again, the familiar dirge over the loss of the Gaon and the Tzaddik, some account of his profound commitment and prodigious diligence, but barely the faintest trace of a portrait. Incredibly, the most basic aspect of his contribution to the Torah world, the scope and nature of his activity as a Paisik, and we heard before from Rabbi Schwartz about this, was virtually ignored for reasons which can only be surmised. It was all very true, and very sincere, and terribly deficient. One reflected in dismay and disbelief, Sir Ravon Lichtenstein, that a listener who had no previous knowledge of either would have come away from both funerals with the impression that there was relatively little difference between the Gedolim. He could think of both under the rubric of several abstractions and genuinely mourn their loss. But he would have very little idea of who specifically they had been. He would surely have no inkling of their being respectively Rav Aaron, a perpetual dynamo, almost a firebrand, and Rav Moshe, a remarkable blend of boldness and meekness, of their approaching both the study and the implementation of Torah in very different ways. It was astounding that Talmidei Chachamim, who were habituated to noting the finest distinctions in the halachic sugya, could so utterly fail to delineate and define persons they had known and admired. And it seemed unlikely that this was simply because they were now overcome by grief. I sensed that the requisite powers were simply lacking, and I reflected that a measure of certain aspects of general culture could have remedied the deficiency. So Rav Aaron here is arguing that an exposure to general culture would have sensitized those who were maspid, Rav Aaron and Rav Moshe, to use different kind of language, to try to do something differently than they did, and that is to try to characterize with a little more precision the uniqueness that went into and the differentiations that were there between these great Gedolei Yisrael and others. Whoever has attended similar funerals can probably attest to parallel experiences. Nevertheless, it will be rejoined that this is truly significant. Does it really matter If one thinks or speaks of these gedolim as archetypal gedolim, of these ge'enim as archetypal gedolim without reference to their individual personalities, even if one grants that chachma would have helped flesh out these portraits, would that be genuinely material? For myself, I must answer in the affirmative. That for him it is important. Rav Aaron feels that it is important. It's not just stam that he was a gadol and a tzaddik and a tremendous individual, as obviously they were. But there's something missing, he says, when we don't get a sense of the man. We don't get a sense of the individual, something which he says would be forthcoming from a greater exposure to general culture. I want to come back now to the bottom of page 2, because I want to move now to the issue that concerns me most, and that is the distortion. It's not just a matter of, it's not sufficiently precise, but there are objective distortions. Hamayan is a journal that's put out in Eretz Yisrael by Poel Agudas Yisrael. And it's a wonderful journal. It's a journal that has a lot of Divrei Torah in it and a lot of scholarship. I've used it very, very often to prepare lectures in Divrei Torah. Talmud Tavshin Nun Beis, there's an article by Dr. Ze'ev Lev, who you know from Israel, famous pedagogue and educator and very much involved in Mada and at the same time tremendously Elochiyid, who was responding to a previous article by Rav Shlomo Volba. Shlomo Volba, the great Baal Musar, the Mashkiach in Be'er Yaakov, and later in the Mir. Shlomo Volba, one of the leaders of his world, tremendous Baal Regesh and Baal Nefesh, who wrote wonderful Sfarim. Rav Volba had published in the Ma'ayan, a couple of issues earlier, a critique of the Torah in Derech Eretz community. And in this article, Dr. Ze'ev Lev, Nemtzachun de Krivda, tries to defend the Torah in Derech Eretz community, and then he turns the table. The article is called Tshuva LeBikoret. And he says that there are three criticisms that I want to make of the world of Rav Shlomo Volba. I have the article here. You can take a look at it if you're interested. It appeared in, you have the date here, Talmud Tavshin Nun Beis. The article begins on page 44 and it goes through until page 49. The article is here if you want to see it afterwards. The first criticism of that world is that Talmidei Chachamim are too involved in politics. Why doesn't somebody get up and say, sit and learn? Why doesn't somebody get up and say, shenginik with politics? It's a chilul Hashem already. That's not what you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to be involved learning Torah. Second criticism, there's a lack of tolerance. It's got to be my way, and if it's not my way, then it's unacceptable. Not only is it unacceptable, but you don't even have a right to say it. Not only do I have a right to disagree with you, but meikra didinu, you can't even say it if I disagree with you. Why doesn't somebody come out and say there's such a thing as tolerance within the Torah community? There's such a thing as different drachim. Why doesn't somebody say that? Challenges Dr. Zev Lev to Rav Shlomo Volba. And the third challenge is our issue. The Achrona Yisrael Sfarim, I don't know if to read it in Ashkenazis or Sfaradid. I read Rav Huttner in Ashkenazis. I assume that's the way he wrote it. But I'll go back and forth. L'achrona התרבו ספרים המתארים תולדות חיי גדולי התורה של הדורות שעברו. So lately we've been having a number of gedolim biographies, and he calls them, they're written in an infantile way. Infantilit. Yaldutit, childish. They're written in an infantile way. Hikarti yishit gedolei hador rabim shel hador האחרון. מעיד אני שרוב הספרים הללו מלאים אמת, מהולים בשקר. Hey Mitarim Shabigil Sayragon Yada Khel Shal Shazbal Pet, Lamad Bishkeda Gadola. The Gilbar Mitzvah Darish Kralufne Rabbana. Lomikablin, this is echoed. This echoes Rav Huttner, it's echoes Rabbi Feldman, this echoes Rav Aaron. Lomikablim Shum Abchana Yidiyava Havana Pnimiyuto of Pnimiyut Vishiyuto Shalagadol. Al hit lab to yotav, osfekotav, echit modeidin elu, the echitma avakona atsegadolamiti. You don't get the struggle, you don't get the human being, you don't get the person behind the gun. And he gives four examples. First example is a biography of the Gra, of the Gaon of Vilna, which his son, he said, had gotten for a bar mitzvah present, which he took away from the kid, took it off the shelf, and he buried it. Why? Because the biography of the Gra, Sha'amechaber Hishmit B'mitchavein, five lines from the end of the first paragraph, Al Hitnagduto Shel Agra L'Chasidut, that didn't exist in the Gra's life. There was nothing in the Gra's life against Chasidus. The Gam Ashkafotav Shel Hagaon Al Limudim Kedon Handasa Matematika Mikzaot Acherim. Schneier Lyman, in his article in this volume that I mentioned earlier, has a whole analysis of the attitude of the Gaon of Vilna to secular studies. There's a tremendous positive element to that attitude. In this biography, it's gone, it's not there. So he tells his kid he can't read it. He went, he went to his Rebbe, Rebbe Yaakov, the second example he gives is a biography of Rav Moshe, which states, among other things, that he never read a newspaper. Said Dr. Zev Lev, I may be a lot of things, but I'm not blind, and I saw Rav Moshe read newspapers. Shall New York, probably means the New York Times, the largest Jewish newspaper in the world. Ha'iton ha'yidi shall New York. Mecheskel Abramsky read the Jewish Chronicle, the London Times. Third example, the Chassam Sofer. Somebody wrote that the Chassam Sofer spoke in Yiddish and never spoke German and never learned anything other than Torah. Ha'id ha'aracha shekatav b'no shel ha'chassam Sofer b'germanit. She'aviv diber v'katav b'germanit hoich deutsch. But he told me that Chassam Sofer didn't. His son, there's a haracha of his son that he did. The last example is a book that came out called Shlucha D'Rachmana. I want to come back to this. A biography of Rav Shraga Feivel Mendelevich, that's all. And this biography, in line number 3, is Lahalim and Hakorim. He talks about the very shiurim that Mr. is known as Mr. Mendelevich in Torah Vadas used to give. And he forgot to mention that Mr. Mendelevich, Rav Haya Noheg, Latei Shiur al Torato Shel Rav Kook, that in Torah Vadas, Mr. Mendelevich gave a shiur on the Torah of Rav Kook. He forgot to mention that in this book. And he also writes about Pratim al Hamasa Matan Vaheheskeim in Mechwela, Brooklyn. I want to come back to that, to a fascinating little known story in the late 40s of American Jewish Orthodoxy. So he has 4 examples: the biography of the Gra, the biography of Rav Moshe about the newspapers, the Chassam Sofer about German and secular studies, and Rav Shraga Feivel Mendelevich. Halomis Farim Elu, last paragraph, Ba Kedei Lahatzdik Hashkafotav Shel HaSofer. Now we're getting to the bottom line. That part of these are in order to justify the Hashkafa of the writer. In other words, I want to justify my Hashkafa by being Taylor the Ilan Gadol, not necessarily an objective assessment of my subject, but this is the Matzdik my Hashkafa. Oed Deotav HaKedumot Shel Olam HaKorim Sheba'avuram Yuadim Asfarim. I want to strengthen the Hashkafa Soilam of the Oilam for whom these books are being written. Osha Sofer Rotzel Hashpia Al HaKorim. Sofrim Elu Einam Mefachadim Mishimush Bishkarim, and so on. And therefore, says Dr. Lev to Rav Shlomo Volba, knew, where are you? Why isn't somebody get up and say, let's be honest, let's be true, and let's not distort? The top of page 4, what I want to do now is pick up a few examples. The top of page 4, there's an article that appeared in Hamavaser, which is from Yeshiva Shabbat Yitzchok Chanan, an undergraduate and some graduate students, in 1989. And this was shortly after the biography of Rabbi Moshe appeared. And there's an interview here with Rabbi Moshe Pendler, the son-in-law of Rabbi Moshe. In a telephone interview, second paragraph, Moshe Pendler made the following points. Biographies of Gedolim have 2 constructive goals. They can teach Torah truths from the halacha l'maaseh of their conduct, and they can record the historical facts of their lives as part of Nitzchias of Am Yisrael. Too often, this is Rabbi Pendler talking, the first goal perverts the second. Inaccuracies, fictional accounts are recorded to accentuate the moral lessons that are often not clearly enunciated in the life story. Occasionally, intentional falsehoods are included to pervert the truth of their lives. He gave 2 examples. The first one I want to come back to. I wrote a long article about it, about the closing of the yeshiva in Valozhin, that it's the 14th of the Yud Gimel Ikrin, is that the yeshiva in Valozhin was closed because the Netziv didn't want to institute secular studies. And second of all, the biography of Maishver, he says, has become a major force in Habatzah Satayra, but they are at the mercy of the authors of this biography by perpetuating such falsehoods. Nachamo, as Rav Moshe never reading the newspapers when in fact he read them cover to cover daily, they sought to remake him, listen to this, is starker language, they sought to remake him into their perverted image. This is Rabbi Pendler of what a gadol should be. The fact that neither I nor my wife or children were interviewed by them, nor shown the galleys, confirms the intentional plan to present a fraudulent life story for some less than honorable purpose. Biographies such as that of Amosha seem more interested in presenting their view of what a gadol should be, rather than presenting a clear view of who a specific Adam Gadol actually was. The bottom of the page, I xeroxed the section from the book Shlucha Derachmana about Mr. Mendelevich and the issue of college, the issue of secular study, which is of particular interest to me. It says here, Neged Ha'alicha LeKollege, and you have the page number, or you don't have the page number, or you do have, page 173, 174, here's the book. Neged Ha'alicha LeKollege, Rav Schlager Feivel stood against going to college. Why was Mr. Mendelevich, Rav Schlager Feivel, Zatzal opposed to college? Two reasons. Number one, Mishim Mevaker b'Mechlola, Nishleles Mimeno Ha'avsheiros Litzmach Gadol B'Torah Amiti. If you go to college, then you're not going to be able to become a Gadol B'Yisrael. Because to be a Gadol B'Yisrael, we talked before, requires Haravanya. You got to sit at Amelim B'Torah, beginning of Parshas B'Chukosai. And if you go to college, you're spending time on other things. It's taking away time from your ability to be constantly involved in Torah, which will create you into an Adam Gadol. And second of all, he says, there are dangers in going to college, because you're exposed to all kinds of heresies and ideas and issues and problems that may serve to weaken your emunah, your faith. However, against his will, second paragraph, Igiu achakach yamin shelo haya le'el yodo la'atzor ba'arazera, there were six boys in Perev Adas who went to college anyway. They were pirates together and went to college. So Rav Schlager Feivel met with them every Sunday morning. They had a special shear for these boys to hold on to them, to make sure that they don't become krum in college and that they maintain their level of emunah. Hikti shah shlema b'chol yer mishan v'shavua levata mehem ashpa samechlala she'emida b'sakana es kol yahadutah. When Shlomo Hainan came to Torah Vidas, they clamped down again. No boys are allowed to go to college. When I was in Torah Vidas, my smicha is from Torah Vidas. When I was in Torah Vidas, many boys went to college. But it went through up and down. They went through more times when more boys, less boys. I understand now that no boys are allowed to go. What they do or not, I don't know. But officially, boys are not allowed to go. In my days, many boys went to college, including myself. I went to Brooklyn College at night. When Rav Shlomo Hainan came, they clamped down again. No boys allowed to go to college. Aber, 5-6 years later, Nachama Lapirza, boys started to go to college. So they came up with an interesting plan, says the author of Shlucha Derachmana. Achadim Yichavrei Var Hanhola, Hagura Ayon, Liftoach B'dinyan Miyuchad, Michutz Lekotlei HaYeshiva, Michlala Charedit Atzmait. We can open up our own college, outside of the walls of the yeshiva, a separate building. Sheitnahel b'shutfut in Yeshivas Reb Chaim Berlin and Yeshivas Rebbeinu Yaakov Yosef. So Torah Vidas, RJJ, and Chaim Berlin were going to get together and found their own college. Nichlala Charedit Atzmait. Ba'al yada yatzilu et ha-mitakshim levakeh b'mechlala min ha-hashva'ah ha-mar'ilah ha-shoreret b'college ha-ironi. If you want to go to college, so you go to our college. We'll have a kosher college. We won't have all of those professors who seek to tear down and destroy and challenge. We'll have Erlich Yidden teaching, and you'll go to college, but it'll be our college. Tashteitzach, chutz mikaisle ha-yeshiva. This is a separate building, a separate institution. Ha-aneshim ha-ele tiplu b'nosei, hispiku kvar la'asot et kol ha-sidurim ha-nechutzim l'tichat mechlala, ach kishabau la-haldiya al-kach, Rav Shraga Feivel, amr lahem shalai yitachan la'asus dover kazeh b'lo psak, Halacha Barur, Umifarash and Gedolei Hador. You have to go see Das Torah, something like this. It's not stam an easy thing to go open up your own college. You have to see what the Gedolim say. Upana l'shol et pi hagon rabar kapla zatzal ula'achar shekidel tshuvah shlilit nitbatel ha'inyan. According to this version in Shlucha Derachmana, Rav Shraga Feivel was asked after the arrangements were made, and he said, I don't know, b'feg ha'shayla, and Rabbi Paskin, no, and the answer was no. Turns out that Rav Shraga Feivel Mendelevich was on the board of this school. It's not pshat that some other people got together and then asked them, and he said, before I give my haskama, I have to ask Rabbi. Turns out that he's on the board, and the records are in Albany. This is just, it's open. The records are in Albany. Willy Helmreich wrote a book a number of years ago, The World of the Yeshiva. And on the bottom right-hand side, page 47, he tells the story. The petition was submitted to the regents of the University of the State of New York, requesting a charter for a new institution to be known as the American Hebrew Theological University. The American Hebrew Theological University. The proposed college was to be formed by a merger of Torah Vidas and Chaim Berlin. He doesn't have here, the secular records don't have RJJ. The Shluch of the Rachmana had a Kabbalah that RJJ was also involved, but he only had Torah Vidas and Chaim Berlin. Its board of trustees included, listen, Rav Shraga Feivel Mendelevich and Rav Yitzchak Kuttner. According to the charter application, it's in Albany. The school would offer a basic liberal arts program, full complement of secular courses such as psychology, chemistry, and mathematics. They also wanted to found graduate schools, three graduate schools, the School of Theology, the School of Social Sciences, the School of Administration. Rabbi Lyman, Rabbi Harold Lyman, is the father of Rav Schneur Lyman, was involved, very much involved, and he was interviewed by Willy Helmreich. He says why they did it. We at Torah Vidas were confronted with the problem of people leaving the yeshiva altogether to go to Brooklyn College. There they had teachers who ridiculed religion. Therefore, we wanted to establish a college right in the yeshiva. So it's not clear, is it mamish right in the yeshiva, or is it mechutz l'kais by ha-yeshiva, so that we would not waste time going to Brooklyn and be exposed to contrary philosophy. How could this have been contemplated when European gedolim such as Rabbi Chanan or Baruch Be'er stated that secular college studies were forbidden? It was done because we faced a serious problem, and we approved it because of the circumstances of the day. They were actually granted a provisional charter on July 18, 1946. On June 20th, 1947, it was withdrawn. And here, the Baal Shlucha Drachmana is right. It was withdrawn because Rav Aaron put his foot down, and Rav Aaron Kotel Zatzal said, nothing doing this is unacceptable, and as a result, it never went forward. It was it was holding by opening when Rav Aaron said no, and that Rav Aaron's no is no, and there was nothing to talk about. So you can't say that Rav Shraga Feivel was not involved, and only when he was asked, he said, we have to go ask Rav Aaron, but he was involved. And Rav Huttner was involved. They were both on the administrative committee in the records in Albany to put together this university. I want to move now briefly to the issue of Halashon, and I wrote a long article on it. I have the article here. It's the second issue of the second volume of the Torah Ma'adah Journal. I get a lot of mail from the Lakewood Cheder, and I'm sure many of you do as well. And I get a lot of the books that they send out, and I'm sure many of you do as well, and I send them money. I got a book called My Uncle the Nativ, and I did what I do with all the other books. I put it in the bookcase. Then came this letter. And this letter said, dear friend, we're sorry we sent you the book, My Uncle the Nativ. Regretfully, the book you recently received, second paragraph entitled My Uncle the Nativ, does not meet these standards, the standards of what the Lakewood Cheder stands for. It does not correctly portray the Nativ, his Ashkafas, Kedusha, and Yerushalayim, as related to us by his revered Talmidim, the ones who know him best. It's an example of the true Nativ. His son, Agon, Rav Chaim Berlin Zatzal, quotes his father regarding his decision to close the doors of the famed Valojna Yeshiva rather than introducing secular studies into its program. Do not be anguished that this matter brings about my departure from this world, for it is well worth the sacrifice of my life. Such a statement from the heart illustrates, this really illustrates, the depth of the Nativ's saintliness and his uncompromising principles regarding the primacy of Torah, whatever sacrifices it might entail. You can truly appreciate the Nativ only if you study all his writings. Upon consultation with Gedolei Torah, we recommend the book not be read. If you wish, the Cheder will reimburse you for any donation that you may have sent. When I got this letter, then I went to the drawer, I pulled it out, and I read it. Bus ken zayin azoy shlech, in this book, that I got a recall. The recall piqued my interest much more than receiving the book itself. And it turns out that that's probably what the issue is. Because the book says, the book is an English abridgment of the Mekor Baruch of Rav Baruch Halevi Epstein, who was a nephew of the second wife of the Nativ, who learned in Valojin. Tremendous, unbelievable book. You should read it. It's coming summertime now. Go take it with you on vacation. It's unbelievable. It's Malay Torah, Malay Vertloch, and Malay history. And it's written in an incredible way. The Tartini of Bechlau is a very fascinating. The next issue of the Torah Ma'adah Journal, volume 8, is going to have a letter from the daughter. We know very little about the mishpacha of the Torah Tanima. What happened? What happened to his children? What happened to them? We're having from Mrs. Box, there's going to be a letter in the next issue of the Torah Mada Journal, fleshing out a little bit what happened more to the next generations of the Torah Tamimis family. It was an incredibly fascinating individual. So I read the book, and that's probably what the issue is. Turns out that there was secular studies in Volozhin. If you look at the bottom of page 5, the Makar Baruch actually tells us that there was an enormous amount of secular studies in Volozhin, that anybody who wanted to be involved in both Torah and secular studies, it was known. Gay, foreign, Kim Volozhin. That's where you'll find it. You'll find both. Galui v'yadua haya lakol. Ki harbei kavim shel haskala shel chochmot u'madaim v'yidiyot safot chol yardu li yeshivas Volozhin. Ve'ele me'afim lidim ashen isa'am libam lahem rachashu otam shan meloi chofneyem. Vayo behem kama v'kama shoyim mekabim v'karim yom yom t'midim kesidram. Itonim yomiyim, shivuyim, yarchanim, dailies, weeklies, monthlies, besafot erupa shanot. Ad shehaya lepitgam shagur b'fi abriyot, ki b'yeshiva devalozhin teilachna Torah v'derech eretz, lomar haskalah shelu v'yachad. I don't have time to read the whole thing, he talks about it. So what will you say? You'll say, well, it's only informal, it's only unofficial, but some of the bachrim or maskim, Chaim Nachum Bialik, learned in Volozhin. So is it Volozhin's fault that Chaim Nachum Bialik learned in Volozhin? Is it Volozhin's fault that they had Talmidim who were maskilim? But take a look at the top of page 6. Lo and behold, it's in the curriculum of the yeshiva. The secular studies in the curriculum of the yeshiva, in the autobiography of Rabbi Meir Bar Ilan, the son of the Netziv, Mivolozhin of Yerushalayim, tells us an incredible story. It's a story that's full of pain. It's an amazing story how in downstairs, he says, Lamato, in the Cheder Abinyan of the yeshiva, there was a big room that had chairs and it had a place for the teacher to speak. Al Gabi Akir Haisa Pluyat Munaso Shel HaKesar Alexander Ashlishi and Zikno Atzov Agol, a big picture of the Kesar in the yeshiva in Volozhin on the wall of the classroom. And there were secular studies. What would happen? The teacher would come and Sinishnu Medvayman. There's nobody there. The room is empty. They're all in the Beis Medrash. What would the teacher do? He'd go upstairs, he'd have a glazer latte, warm himself up, and he'd say, Rezach the hearts, and that the bachim are so lazy they don't want to come study. Hadvarim nimshechu b'derach zu, second paragraph, at shehaya hechrach le'echos b'hem tzin, they had to do something. Because zogat upitin, if the secular authorities find out that this is not being taken seriously, then there would be a tremendous challenge to their existence. They were worried that somebody would go snitch on them. What would happen? Ha'etzah tova biyoter hayta she'aba zal v'netziv b'chvodo u'ba'atzmo. Listen to what he used to do. Haya nechnas li yeshiva nigash al ha'shulchan shelefanav yoshvim harishumim kitalmidim b'kita u'mitchanen alayhem. Please, ana b'ni, ditlu sha'a mitalmud Torah u'redu al ha'kita. Amor ha'mechakesh sham zeh kechatzi sha'a ve'inish. Asu zot l'man ha'yeshiva talmud Torah d'rabim. B'mevatel talmud Torah d'yachid. In order to maintain Talmud Torah, the Rabbim, to maintain the existence of the yeshiva. Ubnei ha-yeshiva b'ratzon shelo b'ratzon hayu mechrachim lesgor et sifrei ha-gemara v'ayuradeyev shalom d'rov v'arvechem yardim l'mata. Shtel Zachor says, Rav Meir Bar Ilan, ha-yisurim ha-nafshiyim shel ha-more ha-godol, the great helig in Netziv, shehoya muchrach l'vakesh bakasha zu. You know what it must have meant for the Netziv to go to Bachram while learning and say, do me a favor, close the Gemara and go learn Russian. And there's no question about it. The Netziv desperately did not want this to happen. But the Netzius is that not only was there secular studies informally, but there were secular studies formally as part of the curriculum in Volozhin. Why did Volozhin close? Volozhin closed because they wanted to turn Volozhin into a university. And I Xeroxed for you from the newspaper of 1892. This is very shortly before the close of Volozhin in Hamelitz. It's available today. This is a primary source. This explains exactly what the Russian government wanted to do in Volozhin. And anybody would close the yeshiva given these kinds of challenges. Number one, he says, these are Chukim Odot HaYeshiva de Volozhin, March 7th, 1892, from the newspaper, direct. One of them is that they have to teach Russian and Melechet HaCheshbon in this school like in all other schools. Number two, all the teachers have to teach in Russian, and they all have to have diplomas that they went to study Russian. Ishtal Zachfor, the Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin, needed to have diplomas that they were experts in Russian. If you look at the daily schedule under Tochan HaLimudim number 6 Aleph, LeLimudim HaKololim Mechuyav LeHiyot Katzav Hazman Misha 9 Ad 3 Beyom. Secular studies from 9 to 3. Next, at most they can only be open for 10 hours a day, which means that the Deichik, the afternoon Seder, they'll squeeze in a Shtekel Torah and afternoon Seder after 9 to 3 secular studies. And number Gimel is that this, at night it's closed. At night, the doors close at night. It's not open at night. Faced with such a law, the yeshiva of Alajan has to close. This is ridiculous. How can you run a yeshiva like this? All the Rosh Yeshiva have to have a secular diploma. They all have to speak in Russian. Secular studies is from 9 to 3. And in the winter time, when it gets dark at 4, finished, it's closed. That's not a yeshiva. The Russian closes. But it's not true to say that it closed in order to avoid any contamination with secular studies, because we see, you have it in front of you, that in fact it existed. It was al-apay va'al-chamasay of the Nitziv. There's no question about it. But the reality was that it existed. Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch. Huge controversy. Ada Yom Hazeh, it's in our community. What's the legacy of Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch? If you look at the bottom of the next page, the bottom left of page 7, is the famous Birka Shmuel at the end of Kedushin. Birka Shmuel at the end of Kedushin says, basically, in so many words, I, Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch, I, Karim Derech Eretz, how could it be? So he says, in so many words, it was Ahiras Shah, that for his time, and his generation, and his community, and his circumstances, and his surroundings, Tsai Russia. This is a big debate, because the historical record has proven conclusively that it was not a Russia. In this book, again, I come back to in Schneer Lyman's article, and also in my own introduction, I have a long footnote to show that Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch did not mean his ideology to be a Russia. And I just quote you one example from Rabbiner Dr. Joseph Breuer, who has impressive pedigree and credentials as an appropriate interpreter of Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch. Here it is, the Mitteilungen. Mitteilungen is the letter, the newsletter of the Breuer. Remain unaware of the greatness of Rabbi. Salvation and strengthening of both. Anyone who has but a fleeting insight into the life and work of Rabbiner Hirsch will realize that his Torah Derech Eretz formula was never intended by him as a Hirat Shah. And you have the whole thing, it goes into page 7 on the left hand side. It's not a Hirat Shah, and if you're interested in pursuing this, there are about 10 pages in Reb Schneer's article, a long footnote in my own introduction. There is the Tile Tilum of evidence that that's not the case with regard to Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch. But the basic point that I'm trying to make, and will continue to make, is don't change Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch. Don't change the salvation and strengthening of both. Anyone who has but a fleeting insight into the life and work of Rabbiner Hirsch will realize that his Torah Derech Eretz formula was never intended by him as a Hirat Shah. And you have the whole thing, it goes into page 7 on the left-hand side. It's not a Hirat Shah, and if you're interested in pursuing this, there are about 10 pages in Reb Schneer's article, a long footnote in my own introduction. There is the Tile Tilum of evidence that that's not the case with regard to Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch. But the basic point that I'm trying to make, and will continue to make, is don't change Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch. Don't change Rav Shraga Feivel Mendelevich. Don't change Rav Moshe. He is what he is. He was what he was. You may not be happy with that aspect of him, but you can't go ahead and say it's not true. You have to deal with it. You have to face the truth of history. Rabbi Yaakov Emden was an extremely complex person. You have to face the reality of what he was and deal with him accordingly. The Heilige Yosef, the Yosef Ne'emah, I hope you read it. It's really a wonderful journal. It's a wonderful magazine, a newspaper. Comes out every week from Muncie. So the Heilige Yosef in 1994, I read it very carefully. It's not the only thing I read. I mean, I read other things, but I read the Yosef to keep, to just to know what's going on. in the world. The Hillel Yosset had an article in January of 1994, a review, I don't know whose page this is, but it went out, it went on. A review of the life of Rav Dessler Zatzal. And I read it, and whatever little hair I had was standing up. I couldn't believe it. It's an amazing, amazing article. He writes about Rav Dessler, and he writes about Dessler's father, and he writes about Rav Dessler's father's Rebbe, and the Rebbe of Rav Dessler's father's Rebbe. It starts with Rav Yisrael Salanta. Yisrael Salanta's plan, we're now on the right-hand side of page 7, left column, was to educate Balabat. Rabbanim, he says, we'll always have. Aber Balabatim, we need to have Balabatim who are appropriate Balabat. So Rav Simcha Zissou was the Talmud of Rav Yisrael Salanta. He undertook to implement the plan, and to this end, he opened the yeshiva for younger students in Grubin. Here, the young student was immersed in Torah and Musar, with the strongest emphasis on character training. Listen to this, Rav Simcha Zissou yeshiva in Grubin. Listen to the curriculum. The curriculum also included a great innovation of those days, to be sure, classes in the Russian language, history, geography, and other general studies to equip the student for his future role in life. Shtal Dukhvar, Rav Simcha Zissou's yeshiva, Talmud of Rav Yisrael Salanta, look what they had, Russian language, history, geography, and general studies. Rav Reuven Dov, who was a Talmud of Rav Simcha Zissou, was a Talmud of Rav Yisrael Salanta, went to this yeshiva, he imbibed the hashkafa of his Rebbe, and when he had his son, Rav Dessler, Rav Elia Laser, went out the bottom of that column, during his childhood years, little Elia Laser, this is Rav Dessler, Zatzal, was taught privately at home, true to the principles of his Rebbe, Rav Simcha Zissou. The boy's father, Rav Reuven Dov, included general studies in the curriculum. Among these were some classics of world literature in Russian translation. One of them, Sir Rav Dessler told me, was Uncle Tom's Cabin. The reason for this choice is not far to seek. For me it is far to seek. I don't, Pashtenish, the goblet of why Dafka Uncle Tom, for me it is far to seek. Maybe I'm missing something in my secular knowledge that doesn't lead me to appreciate the goblet. But for the author of this article, it was Pashit that Uncle Tom's Cabin is going to be part of the staple of the childhood reading of Rav Dessler. I read this. What?
The article of the Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Maybe he thought it was something that it wasn't. Didn't like finally read, yeah.
Freedom.
Okay, anyway, I read this, and Mamish, ich bin es voll umgang. That the Heilige Yosef should publish an article that Rav Simcha Zissou, I mean, we're talking now about Ge'oinei Ezmutar, he's a giant of Mutter. Rav Simcha Zissou's yeshiva should have secular study, and that a Talmud in that yeshiva, Rav Reuven Dov Dessler, should be so enamored by it and taken by it that when he hodav is up, his own son, who became the great Rav Dessler, he fed him a diet of Russian literature. And he fed him Uncle Tom's Cabin. Sure enough, 2 weeks later, turn to page 8, there's a letter to the editor of the Heilige Yosef. Now we're talking. Now this is what I... Oh, that's the letter. The letter said, you did a horrible thing. You'll notice I cut out the names of anybody with whom I'm disagreeing. So I didn't tell you the name of the author of Shlucha D'Rachmana. I'm not mentioning any names of people with whom I disagree. So there's a letter, a very chashuv. How much more time do I have?
Why? Isn't that part of the truth?
That is. But I gave you enough that you could find it yourself. I wasn't the Salik, the truth, Daniel. But I didn't want to mention their names. I gave you chapter and verse, page number. You'll go find it. If you really want it, you'll find it yourself. Letters to the editor, to strengthen Emunah Torah and Yiras Shamayim. It's an amazing letter to the editor. The first column is, the Yosef is a wonderful thing. The Yosef, the pace, the plenitude, the Yosef, wonderful. Inspiring is great. Having said this, paragraph 2-3, I feel the need to inform you that various Torah scholars definitely feel that an error was committed by your editorial staff through the inclusion in the above-mentioned article of the chapter entitled Torah Derecheret Kelim Style. In fact, some of them expressed to me their amazement and outrage. Oh, now we're getting to it. Over the contents of that chapter, the Yosef Ne'eman has to be vigilant. Every single word, every single ice has to make sure that it's al pitaros lekodesh. It must maintain a constant vigilance over every sentence and phrase that it publishes in order to ensure the Emunah Torah Yiras Shamayim should be strengthened by that phrase and not the opposite. Right-hand column. In your article about the life of the great Rav Dessler, the chapter is termed Derecheret Kelim Style.
contradicts material which definitely contains material which definitely contradicts the Das Torah of the Gedolei Torah of our times, including Rav Shach, Chazanish, the Ditzgerav, the Byron, and the Cycle. You will surely admit that the reference to, quote, some classics of world literature in Russian translation, etc., including Avol Pam Tiadit, will not strengthen Emunah, Torah, and Yir Shemayim in any one of your readers. Thus, a disservice has been done to your readers who seek guidance based upon Das Torah of their times. Consequently, this constitutes a virtual deviation from the original aims and goals of your periodical. Rav Dessler was a tremendous Gadol b'Yisrael. Many stories of his own personal history he related to these Talmidim with the sole purpose of gaining their confidence. They were not intended for public knowledge and certainly not for actual publication. The author of this letter knows that better than the author of the article. Now listen, this paragraph is my favorite paragraph. One of the great features which distinguish the world of B'nai Torah from other sections of Orthodox Jewry is the readiness on our part to be Maidal Emes, to admit to the truth when we have made an error, because Emes, the truth, the seal of the Almighty, is the greatest prize. Therefore, you should be Maidal Emes and say you made a mistake and you did a terrible thing. So I was tempted to write a letter to the editor, Yisrael Nan Shulding, but if you're being Maidal Emes, if Emes is so important, then that's the Emes. What does he say? What's his argument against it? It contradicts the Das Torah of the Chazanish and the Verbarin and of the Stifler and so on. What contradicts the Das Torah? The Metzias or not the Metzias? What must contradict the Das Torah is publishing the Metzias. But Emes is Emes. I take his same word and I could write a letter, and I was tempted to do so, to the Yosei and say, Hashma la'aznacha ma'ashat ha'maitzim ipicha. If Emes is Emes, then that's the fact and you have to live with the fact. A few other examples.
Did they answer this letter?
No, they never answered the letter. There was no editorial response next to this letter. But they published the letter. Shmir Shabbos Kel Chasa. We've all learned Shmir Shabbos Kel Chasa. This is a little footnote alone. From the first edition to the second edition. So they say, and I've seen it myself in a few cases, that in the second edition, the Mechaber took out a lot of the coolest from the first edition. Okay. Now look what else he took out from the first edition. I Xerox two footnotes for you. You have the page numbers. There's a steer in the Mishnah Berurah. So he says, for enter the steer in the Mishnah Berurah, in version number one in the first edition, line three, the middle of the line, the Neiro Pirdos Hazman, Ne'elach HaChafetz Chayim Limtzar Chelek Mimelechet Hachibu Lubno, V'hu Cholek Alotu. Shal Zafar, I don't know how you know this. That the whole Mishnah Berurah was not written by the Chafetz Chaim. Parts of the Mishnah Berurah were written by his son. So Mimela, Shtel Zachamol, that there's a contradiction. Miro, Pierda, Tazman, Nela, Tachavetz Chaim, Limsar, Chelek, Mimelechet, Vachibur, Lubnai, Uchelek Allah. Look at the next edition, 14 years later, the exact footnote. That line is missing. So I just asked myself, why is that line missing? And invite you to give whatever answers you'd like to give. The Rav Zatzal, historical revisionist. In the first issue of the Torah Mada Journal, Rabbi Walter Wurzberger talked about historical revisionism in Rav Kook, in Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, which I touched on briefly, and at that time the Rav was still alive, and in the Rav. An article appeared top of page 9 on the right hand column. It appeared last year. It's part of an article that says, Nishmanish Veiniger, that the reason why the Rav went to college, Limudei Chol, this is about the Rav, Rabin Temeyim Al-Kach, Sherabenu Zal Nosel LeBerlin Lilmod Univerzi Tashama. Mahi Niyu Lassos Kazer. You hear? What could possibly have motivated him to do something like this, to go to the university in Berlin? I heard, says the author, the following, that the Rav had to run away from the draft. He was being pursued by the army in Russia. A close family wanted to pay him off, to pay off the authorities to save him, but the authority to whom they gave a lot of money pocketed it. So in Nebuch he was vulnerable. So he had to go. Volcano Chlitu, 5 lines from the bottom, Shinisa Lichutsu Nidina, Lihinatel Shama. But he had to run away because otherwise you'd be in the army, you'd be in the Russian army, you'd be there for 20 years. Once he had to leave home already, right? Once he's running away from home, he might as well go all the way to Berlin and go to university in Berlin. Why not? Might as well. He's running away anyway. But without the shtip of the draft, he never would have gone. So Kuzum called to me, this doesn't make any sense. I mean, to me, it's just simply not logical. Because you have to run away from the draft in Russia. I might as well go to Berlin, pick up a PhD. I can't be home anyway. I might as well go to Berlin. Logically, I don't understand. And second of all, it's wrong. The mishpacha of the Rav is deeply upset by this. Extremely upset. It's a distortion of the Rav. Listen to the Rav's son-in-law, my teacher, Professor Tversky. Listen to part of a hesped that he gave for his father-in-law. And he printed it in tradition. You have the reference, top left-hand side. And when I spoke to Professor Tversky about this article, he referred me to his article. I said to him, I need you to write more. And he promised me, Yemitz Hashem, if he should be well, and I hope he will be well, and Yisra Refuah Shleima, that the next issue of the Torah Mabit Journal will have an article by Professor Tversky talking about the centrality of secular studies in the Weltanschauung of the Rav. But he said, meanwhile, take a look at this. Similarly, if you knew nothing about the Rav's biography and merely studied the Isha Halacha, published in 1944, you would confront a massive strategic reliance on the history of philosophy and science. The first two pages, you've read Isha Halacha, I'm sure you've read it more than once. So Dr. Tversky reminds us who he quotes in Isha Halacha. We're not talking about the lonely man of faith now. We're not talking about a philosophic opus. We're talking about Isha Halacha, what makes a halachic individual. The first two pages introduce you to Hegel, Kierkegaard, Rudolf Otto, Karl Barth, Edward Spanger, Ferdinand Lassalle, Rousseau, Nietzsche, Bergson, Spengler, and Heidegger. A breathtaking list. Page later, not finished yet. Plato, Aristotle, Galileo, Newton, and soon thereafter, Husserl, Scheller, Berkeley, Hermann Cohen. If you persist and make your way to the end of this remarkable philosophical spiritual meditation, the very last note reminds you, refocuses your attention on a cast of influential figures. Kant, Hermann Cohen, Kierkegaard, Ibsen, Scheller, Heidegger, together with the Rama living in Yabiro. And once again, after a passing reference to Thomas Scotus, to Schopenhauer and to Nietzsche. These references reflect not only great erudition and precision in the history of philosophy, but also a philosophic temper, a philosophical mode of thinking, a subtle analytical mind. This is all by somebody who is a gewalget to Berlin because he had to be thrown out of Russia because he had to run away from the draft. So in Isha Halacha, look what he writes, in Isha Halacha, we're talking about a halachic personality, the creation of a halachic personality. Look what's in there. So it's inconceivable to say what has been said, and it's wrong and it's a distortion. And it's not the emes of what the Rav was. I have just another, managed 2 more minutes. I just briefly want to rush you to talk about the last two examples. These are more well known. Amar Deva Halacha Rav Zevin talks about, Hilchas Tisha B'Av, and Haroa Arei Yehuda V'Churbanam. Talks about a bracha that you have to make.
No, I'm just going to think.
Haroa Arei Yehuda V'Churbanam, you make a bracha, you don't make a bracha. So he says at the end, the Kafua, if I skim 3 lines from the bottom, Churbanam Shel Arei Yehuda Hu, She'akum Moshman Aleya. When do you have to make, Pia Kriya to reflect is only when Akum Moshlin. Mistaver Shi'im Shechruran Shel Arei Yehuda Mishona Mishilton Nachrim. The Hakamat Medinat Yisrael Ashreinu Shezachinu Lekach. Batel Din Akriya Alot Hamayarim. Comes along the English translation of the festivals in Halacha, and sure enough, the commentators on the Shulchan Aruch define the term the cities of Yehuda in ruins as meaning that the Gentiles are ruling over them. It could be argued that since the liberation of the cities of the Judean hills from Gentile rule, the law of rending the garments of these cities may no longer be enforced. So you have black and white, you understand my point. The last example that I want to give to you before I show you 2 pictures is from the Makor Baruch of Baruch HaLevi Epstein. I'll just tell it to you. He talks about what was on the night table of Reina Batya, of his aunt. What did she study? What did she learn? And in the original, there's reference to Persha Balpeh, that she learned Mishnayot. And in the English translation, all the references to the Persha Balpeh are taken out. So, it's a big issue today about the Torah learning for women and so on. But the reality is that she did study Persha Balpeh. You can't just, when you translate it, you can't just leave out the parts that you don't learn. Page 10, to me, is phenomenal. And to page 10, Atudos is where we're holding today in Orthodoxy. In 1971, there was a Shulchan Aruch published that had an appendix, Shar HaTziyurim by David Feldman. And it gives you a picture of what putting on talis and so on should look like. And you have it on page 10. You have the very fine individual putting a talus over his head, and finally Yid putting on tefillin the right way to do the Shel Roish and the wrong way. A few years ago, this was reprinted exactly the same, and lo and behold, a remarkable transformation of the facial hair on the part of the people in the picture.
He
grew older. He grew older. It's mamish exactly the same. They copied exactly the same, and he grew hair. It's an amazing phenomenon. Right, the one who's holding with the Tzol Shereish has payas. The other one, cut off by the razor, what does he know? He cuts off his payas by the razor, he's going to have a wrong Shereish.
All the children's
books, all the fathers portrayed with the beard. Yeah, actually, I just saw today they have children's books. They have two versions. They have the one with the kippah serugah, and they have the one with the more charedi. The last example I want to give you, and I brought you the book, is a picture of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. This Shimi Deutsch, Shaul Shimon Deutsch, that went out to volume 2 of Larger Than Life, The Life and Times of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. There's one thing to say about the book. It's not sophisticated, and it's not well written, and it's jumbled a lot, but he has the pictures, he has the text, he has an incredible amount of information. And so he tells us that, now at the bottom right hand side, the naturalization picture, there was a picture of the Rebbe that was kept when he was naturalized at the National Archives in Bayonne, New Jersey. Two Lubavitcher men went to the National Archives in Bayonne, removed the Rebbe's citizenship picture from the application. One of them decided to publish the picture and had an artist draw a yarmulke, parenthesis, skull cap, and parenthesis, on the Rebbe's head. Now you have the pictures here, the left side, you judge for yourself. Maybe the Xerox didn't come out so well, but here's the book. You judge for yourself. The right-hand side has the picture of the yarmulke. He has a copy, Deutsch, of the Rebbe's passport application with the Rebbe's passport picture, and you'll judge yourself. Maybe he does. Maybe he does. Maybe he does. Absolutely, maybe he does. Maybe he does. But he doesn't have the yarmulke that's printed on the top right-hand side on page 12. That he doesn't have. In conclusion, Rabbi Elias, is the head of the Breuer Seminary, very well known. Rabbi Elias uses the exact same argument that I'm using. Rabbi Elias says that, let it be well understood, that we have to understand history, but he says here, we must see the present in light of the past and not reversely project the passing ideas of the day, its confusions and uncertainties into the past. He concludes his article, talks about people who teach. The right-hand side, he must be quite clear about the fundamental principles, the Ikri and Mun of the Torah, as they are taught to us by the awesome events of the earliest past. And he must, without fear or favor, apply these principles to the evaluation of the world in which we live. If he reverses the process, and this is the end, if he permits his values and judgment to be subject to the influence of his age, he will arrive at a distorted picture of both the Torah world and the secular world, and he will even project these distortions into that past from which he could have learned the truth. The truth is the truth. Face the truth. Deal with the truth. And that's the only way that we could possibly aspire to be the kind of an Torah that we should be. Thank you. I have some time for some questions. Yes, I'm at home.
I'm sure you're aware of this, and I hope everyone else is, that these distortions appear not only in the writings of the right, but also appear in some of the leftists. If you take a look at the conservative Siddur, it's very interesting that when it comes to Magid Dvarav Yaakov, Kukav Mishpatav, when it comes to Magid Dvarav Yaakov, Kukav Mishpatav in Israel, only the first verse is translated, but does not appear in the translation of the conservative Siddur. Number one. Number two, if you take a look at the Bracha Baruch Atah Hashem Chayei Ameisim, which is the text, the traditional text, but if you look in the translation, it's a translation from the Union Prayer Book, who calls us to life everlasting. So they're also guilty of these kind of distortions.
And I think I was wondering what you said. The art scroll.
I didn't mention any names.
The art scroll is guilty of a gross, purposeful distortion of the meaning of Tanakh. For example, Shir HaShirim, you will not find the translation of Shir HaShirim. The whole thing is a commentary, but Rabbi Akiva said, Kodesh Kodashim. Therefore, it's Shlomo HaMelech did not mean when he said Shnei Shaddayach Yishnei Oforim, you know, how can you translate the two breasts? You should mention the word breast.
I don't want to deal with the Bible. I'm not dealing with it.
No, you're not
Bible.
Dealing with it. Okay. Comment on it.
I don't want to comment on it.
There are three points. One concerns the Rav in Berlin. Just a note that I was told, I'll tell you later privately who told me, but I don't want to make it public because you didn't take it. I was told that the Rav was a student in the University of Warsaw, and the Polish government wanted to grant that point. So there is a little embassy in the story. He had to flee Poland, he had to flee Warsaw, but he was already in the university. So therefore he went to the university in Berlin. Secondly, Eliyahu Kito in the Sefer HaTodah has two versions, the Hebrew and the English. The Hebrew version omits references to Yom HaTzmahut and to Yom Yerushalayim. It is fully recorded in the English version. Rabbi Moshe Galinsky, who we know from Yeshiva HaDarom, published the Hebrew version of Sefer HaTodah and distributed it at the recent dinner held in Israel in support of the RCA's institution. You can get a copy of it from him. Thirdly, there is a Sefer called Sefer HaShalom, written by the librarian at ETA, Rabbi Epstein. I don't know if he's still alive. He's a mirror. And he collected it in his encyclopedic work, Sefer HaShalom.
Or Mitzvah HaShalom.
Sefer HaShalom.
Mitzvah
HaShalom? All right. Anyway, Rabbi, I stand corrected, I think. Rabbi Epstein in the first edition published a tshuva written by Rabbi Bloch of Pels explaining why he participated in the 1954 celebration of Yom HaTzmahut in Cleveland together with a Mizrahi. He was then on the presidium of Agudas Yisrael. The second edition of that Sefer, maybe it's called Sefer Mitzvah Sashola. So the second edition of that Sefer was published by a Balabas in Passaic, New Jersey, several years ago. That Shuvah, as well as the rest of the chapter, is missing. It just says, Tom below Nishma. That's what it says. I went to the Mendel Gottesman Library when the second volume was published to make sure that I could secure a copy of the original Shuvah of Rav Bloch. At that time, it was still in the Mendel Gottesman Library. I haven't checked since. I don't know. What
okay, thank you. Thank you.
But I'd just like to make you aware of these two. I think they belong in your wonderful
added
presentation.
Material.
Thank you.
They belong there.
Absolutely they belong here. Thank you. And I'd like to talk to you afterwards about the Rav. The Rav's family, the daughters and sons-in-law of the Rav are Eish Lahava against this reformulation of the Rav's legacy.
You know, the real story, his mother wants it. That's the real story.
What you are why
his mother wanted him to go.
I think it's being done for some of the reasons that I mentioned earlier. And I think it's being done for an important reason. In other words, I don't minimize for a second the consideration behind this. And that is that you want to create a certain ideology of the Ben Torah that will best, according to your understanding, be equipped to deal with the challenges of modernity. And the way to do that is that things that are maybe more important than the absolute truth, namely Nitzvias of Klal Yisrael, and you can therefore perhaps distort truth in order to create something larger. And that something larger is the future of the Jewish people. And one of the ways to do that is to create Gedolim in an image that you would want them to be, that you feel would best stimulate people to want to be like them, and that's your ideology. It's a serious. I mean, it's being done for I think a serious reason. Now, my objection is not why it's being done. I understand why it's being done. My objection is that it's unacceptable. You can get what you have to get without being misaleh. It's just not acceptable to do this. I understand why it's being done, and I appreciate why it's being done. And I even, in some sense, support why it's being done. I mean, we're all in that business. We want to create a Judaism that will best be able to function into the 21st century in the craziness of America. The question is how to do it. I don't think this is how to do it. I mean, I'm sure this is how not to do it. Yeah.
I think there is a real tension and a difficulty in choosing whenever you write a biography or want to review the life of someone else, what the person held and what the person might have done from some time. The person can be a great guttle, but he has a weakness for watching championship wrestling on television. So does your biography need to mention championship wrestling to properly understand the full individual?
Excellent.
And the choice not to mention it is somehow you're hiding something.
No, that's a very good point. It's a very, very good point. It's a very good point. I don't think any of the examples that I gave here fit into that category. I think if the Mechaber of Shluchat de Rachmana says that the Rav Shraga Feivel was not involved, but he was involved, that makes a big difference. If Rav Simcha Zissel had a yeshiva, and if Rav Deftel learned Uncle Tom's Cabin, read it, right? That does make a difference. If the Rav went to Berlin and soaked in the philosophical tradition to the extent to which he did, then it does make a difference to say that he only went because he had to run away from the dream. All of these things, I think, are much more significant. When I'm writing on Rabbi Yaakov Emden, you're absolutely right. I constantly struggle with this. Because he wrote it in his autobiography, do I have to write it in the biography? In a way, I'm a little better off, because if he thought it was important enough to write in the autobiography, then I have a Maaser Rav. I mean, literally, I have a Maaser Rav that I could also write about it. He obviously wanted people to know. But I have trouble doing even that with Rabbi Yaakov Emden. There's stuff in the autobiography which is Shemu Shamaya. And to put that into a biography and yet maintain the level of respect for your average American reader who's going to read an English biography published by some university press is a tremendous challenge, and that's why I struggle with this all the time. I actually have a contract with Yale University Press to translate the autobiography into English, and I have cold feet, because how can I put this into the hands of an average English speaker who's not from without it's dynamite, and I actually stopped working on it because I'm not comfortable with it. To that extent, for my book, I have to deal with it as a biography, but to translate word for word the what he says about the Rebbe of Yangison, what he says about himself, to say it in English, it's a lost English. I can't even bring myself to do it, so I stop. So that's where I agree with what it is that you're saying. Rabbi Grossman. This is the last question.
For another 8 hours. I just want to make a very important point, the passing of suspicion. I'm very, very troubled by all forms of historic divisionism. And I think the last statement you made justified this kind of revisionism for partisan parochial interest, not the third. I think it's a very great mistake. First, I touched on a few examples. In biography referred to Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, the omissions of the fact that he was president of the Mizrahi of Canada, was himself a passionate Zionist and a believer in the Hashkafos of Rav Reines and so forth, and wrote about it, which the longer can be found, but I did find a piece in the Gov, whatever it was called, in Toronto, which he wrote, secondly, that at the opening, another measure of significant important. The opening of the first base medrash built in Lakewood by base medrash Gavoah, at the dedication, the principal speaker was right. Sheker has never been the kind of anyone to play with the Yiddishkeit. Sheker has never produced the common culture. Sheker has never aided or abated anything that they or us should or that we indeed do stand for. Thank you.
My only response is I agree with what you're saying. I chose my words very carefully, and I didn't say I justify it. I said I understand it. And there's a big difference between understanding and justifying. Other than that, I fully agree with what you said. Thank you very much, and we move on to the next session.